I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with John Fallon, Senior Program Manager for CSH, the Corporation for Supportive Housing, and Lynn Canfield, Executive Director of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Developmental Disabilities Board. But first, disability news for the week of November 26, 2018. National survey results show as many as 1 in 40 U.S. children have been diagnosed with autism, continuing an upward trend. Researchers estimate 1.5 million American children ages 3 to 17 have been diagnosed with a developmental disorder for a prevalence rate of 2.5%. The figures published online today in the journal Pediatrics come from data collected through the 2016 National Survey of Children's Health, a government survey of parents of more than 50,000 children across the country. According to Michael Kogan of the Federal Health Resources and Services Administration and lead author of the new report, quote, "It is difficult to pin down an exact number. We don't have a biological marker for autism. We know that in terms of having a major condition like autism, parents are usually pretty good reporters compared to medical records," end quote. In April, the CDC reported from the data collection that autism affects an estimated 1 in 59 children based on medical and educational records of thousands of 8-year-olds at multiple sites in the network. The autism prevalence rate of 2.5% found in the 2016 parent survey is up from 1.7% in 2014 and 1.5% in 2012. But Kogan cautioned that the rise could mostly be attributable to changes in the survey format. The study also provides the first national estimates on the prevalence of treatment for autism, Kogan said. About 64% of parents who indicated that their children had autism reported that their son or daughter had received behavioral therapy in the last year, and 27% reported that their child had been treated with medication for autism symptoms, including irritability. The survey results also show the challenges parents face in getting appropriate care, from referrals to specialists to finding family-centered care and accessing care for psychiatric and other medical issues. Exposure to outdoor air pollution may increase the risk of intellectual disability in children, a study conducted in the UK has found. The study, published in the Journal of Intellectual Disability Research, found that British children with intellectual disabilities were more likely than their peers to live in areas with high outdoor air pollution. Said Eric Emerson from the University of Sydney in Australia, quote, "We know that people with intellectual disabilities in the UK have poorer health and die earlier than they should. This research adds another piece to the jigsaw of understanding why that is the case and what needs to be done about it," end quote. The findings come from an analysis of data extracted from the UK's Millennium Cohort Study, a nationally representative sample of over 18,000 children born between 2000 and 2002. Averaging across ages, children with intellectual disabilities were 33% more likely to live in areas with high levels of diesel particulate matter and 30% more likely to live in areas with high levels of nitrogen dioxide. They were 30% more likely to live in areas with high levels of carbon monoxide and 17% more likely to live in areas with high levels of sulfur dioxide. The researchers note that intellectual disability is more common among children living in more socioeconomically deprived areas, which tend to have higher levels of air pollution. However, exposure to outdoor air pollution may impede cognitive development, thereby increasing the risk of intellectual disability. In a recently released issue of Pediatrics, Dr. Hilary Brown and colleagues from Toronto, Canada, ask an important question. Are mothers with intellectual and developmental disability more or less likely to have their infants placed in protective custody immediately after birth compared to mothers without such a disability? The authors use several large and complete national health information databases to answer their question. A total of 3,845 women with IDD who delivered single live infants were compared to 380,000 women without IDD who delivered during the same 10-year period of study. It learned that the rate of immediate post-delivery infant removal to protective custody was about 8 times higher among the women with IDD than without. The study also tracked a proxy measure for the proportion of infants who were still separated from their mothers at 1 year of age by comparing maternal and infant zip codes at that age. While many infants may be in appropriate protective custody, the authors remind us that taking away the opportunity to bond, to breastfeed, and to nurture one's child has potential for an enormous negative impact on both mother and infant. The key may be in the comorbid vulnerabilities that were significantly associated with custody loss among mothers with IDD, psychotic mental health disorders, receipt of social assistance, which paradoxically should have been supportive but instead may serve as a marker for poverty, and inadequate prenatal care as measured by low visit number and no prenatal ultrasound by 20 weeks of gestation. Factors that were not measured but that might be also be expected to significantly associate include homelessness and social isolation. The study recommends shared decision-making between the expected woman, her obstetrician, and her psychiatrist, which presumes adequate maternal health literacy and the cognitive ability to weigh abstract alternatives. It takes little imagination to envision an expectant woman with IDD discontinuing her medications to help her baby, leading to a medical health decompensation with subsequent missed prenatal care visits. Early identification of pregnancy followed by a structured and nurturing combination of prenatal home visiting and specialized pregnancy care is strongly recommended by the authors. And finally, as Illinoisans prepared for a busy Black Friday weekend, some shoppers should have thought twice about where they park. Secretary of State Jesse White and Illinois police teamed up over Thanksgiving weekend for a statewide parking sting that targets people who park in accessible parking spots illegally. The annual operation aimed to enforce rules for accessible parking in several Illinois cities, including Aurora, Bloomington, Carbondale, Chicago, Oak Brook, Orland Park, Peoria, Rockford, Schaumburg, and Springfield. White said, quote, "Our mission is not to issue tickets, but to ensure that accessible parking spaces are available to those who need them. Parking illegally in a space reserved for people with disabilities means a possible driver's license suspension and a hefty fine, money which could otherwise be used on gifts," end quote. Drivers caught misusing a placard could face a 6-month driver's license suspension and up to a $600 fine. The Secretary of State's office said there are 547,637 permanent disability placards and 62,500 disability license plates currently registered in Illinois. And that's the news for this week.
She's got her ticket. I think she's gonna use it. I think she's going to fly away. No one should try and stop her. Persuade her with their power. She says that her mind is made. Why not leave? Why not?
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nyswander, joined today by my guest, Lynn Canfield, who is the executive director of the Mental Health Board and Developmental Disabilities Board here in Champaign County, as well as John Fallon, who is a senior program manager for CSH, the Corporation for Supportive Housing. I hope, John, you're still on the phone.
I am, and looking forward to talking with you.
Okay, very good. And Lynn is right here in front of me, so I'm so glad to have both of you here today. So I'm a little confused about what we're supposed to be talking about, though I am really excited because last week, David Northern, who is the executive director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County, was on my show talking about supportive housing and all the great things that are happening there. So I'm really excited that you're going to be coming to town and stirring the pot a little bit to get people more interested in supportive housing. So I'm going to start with Lynn and ask Lynn to talk a little bit about, you know, introduce herself to the listeners and also talk a little bit about what the Mental Health Board and Disabilities Board does.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Lynn. The Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disability Board are each a separate unit of local government established by referendum at different times in Champaign County's history, and they each have a tax levy that is primarily for the use of planning and funding and evaluating a system of services for people with developmental disabilities, for people with behavioral health issues, mental illness, or substance use disorders. So they're separate boards, but they work together, so they do share a staff. And toward the planning function, I thought it would be a really good time for us to bring John Fallon to this community because he has expertise around best practices in supportive housing. And David Northern is relatively new here, but has brought with him some huge opportunities for our community. We also have a lot of people who are either new in positions of leadership or are new to the table, providing services for vulnerable populations. I probably shouldn't even say that, but we do see an overlap between the people who have a hard time securing and maintaining housing and people with mental illness, substance use disorders, or developmental disabilities. So there's a really natural overlap there, and I think a lot of the service providers are open to new ideas in this community. So John is going to start. The first meeting when you come on Wednesday is going to be with some of those, a couple of innovative service providers in our community. I invited a very small number of people because they're all working with people who are either repeatedly without an address or they're in reentry from prison or jail and are struggling to have a permanent address. So that would be a good start, meet with some of the really driven service providers, and then we move on to the Continuum of Care Executive Committee because they've been for many, many years working together on the HUD application, and I know that John knows a whole lot about that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it just goes on from there for a couple of days, but the main reason I wanted him to come was to speak directly to our boards during a study session, which will be on Wednesday evening, and this is open to the public. There will be a recording of it. I'm not sure. We had initially hoped there would be a live stream video of it, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. We do have a sign language interpreter at the meeting so that it's as inclusive as we can get it, but if we don't get a video, you kind of have to be there. So it's
exactly.
It's at 5:30. Yeah, I love that live stream option. We haven't developed that yet, but we'll keep trying. Wednesday, November 28, at 5:30 at the Brookings Administration Building in the Dimmitt Conference Room, which is over in the Regional Planning
Commission. Oh, I wondered, because that's not the conference room that has the like automatic live streaming, right? Yeah, okay.
But we're working on it.
Okay.
We do have an interpreter. That's a start.
Okay, John, your turn. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about CSH.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm a graduate of University of Illinois from 1983, and I can't wait to go down there and visit. And I've known David Northern for close to a decade, I believe, and some of the work that he's done up where I live in Lake County. And a chance for him to go down in Champaign and bring the resources that are now being released by the federal government for people with disabilities is exciting. And Community Choices in particular has been a leader in pushing to get supportive housing down in the community, Rosecrans, Scarron. So there's a lot of providers down there. So I can't wait to be down there. And I know that I'm meeting with a whole lot of people. And that first group is, by the federal government's definition, is people who are chronically homeless, people who've been on the streets for more than a year or four times in a shelter within a three-year period. And supportive housing has, that was its initial use, was to get people out. So CSH, or Corporation for Supportive Housing, has been around for 25 years, and we're a national organization, and we're located in 14 states, and we do work throughout the country. Generally, we have contracts with federal and state local entities in about 35 states each year, and we also do national HUD TA for federally qualified healthcare centers, as well as HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, at the federal level, and we work with the state to implement the state's misbehavior in the overuse of institutions in something we call Olmstead work, mm-hmm. around consent decrees for people with IDD, or intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as people with mental health. And I did that kind of work, and I look forward to seeing Champaign, really for the first time in a decade, really begin to look at putting affordable housing in there with the services necessary to support people with disabilities who have been treated accurately in the community and now wanting to live more independently, or treated inaccurately and ending up on the streets or prisons or jails, where if you provide that level of support in their housing, they'll become good neighbors within any particular building they live in through scattered site, or if they're living in a single building with other people with disabilities in it. But the services are for them. Supportive housing is where a person has a lease and their own apartment, and then separately they contract for the support services. And those are two different things. One is services are paid for by Medicaid and potentially some kind of other support services. And the apartment itself is a regular apartment in the community with a level of rental support to make it affordable to someone on SSI of $720 a month. And a subsidy helps to make up the difference between what an apartment would usually cost and how much that person could afford.
So I know, John, you've been trying to get some movement going in Champaign-Urbana for how many years has it been now? Five, maybe?
Well, I've been, I've been working. Yeah, longer than that. Within the first month, I had come down to Champaign. Actually, even before I had come down and before I started this job, probably 15 years ago, when the Blagojevich administration, I was on a reentry committee for the state, and we did listening. And we went down and saw the Chicago, or the Champaign County Housing Authority, and they talked about really improving and trying to individualize who they could take into housing. But they never really worked very closely with support.
Mm-hmm.
But David Northern has a long history of really making sure that the services are available and forming the partnerships. This really isn't about the Housing Authority doing everything, or Rosecrans doing everything, or Community Choices, or DSC, or any single support agency. We don't really want support service providers to own the housing. We want landlords to own the housing and support services to be co-located when necessary, or to go and visit people in their apartments when and how a person needs to be supported. And I think it's exciting that David Northern is really interested in these partnerships, and I look forward to finding out the interest of the continuum of care there in Champaign, which traditionally has really relied a lot on emergency shelter,
mm-hmm.
to really start to focus their efforts on supporting people in housing rather than supporting them in homelessness. I mean, it's really important that churches become involved in people at risk of losing housing or needing support to remain in housing rather than worrying about when a person ends up on the street. That's kind of too late, and it's really expensive to get people out of shelter. But to be able to support them in housing requires a particular kind of approach that Champaign County Mental Health has traditionally offered, and I'll find out more about what Rosecrans wants to offer. And Community Choices has been very interested in doing this, and this is the newest population is people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, to stop relying so often on group homes or intermediate care facilities for people with developmental disabilities called ICFDDs, which are really large facilities for people with developmental disabilities that are much different than the kind of arrangement that you've worked with your daughter, where your daughter has a place to live and the support person comes in and they don't watch her when she's sleeping, but you have people who are available to help her when she needs it, and you work on making sure the person asks for help when they need it and does what they're able to. And that's sort of the American dream should exist for people with disabilities, that they have their own home and that they can live where other people live, instead of saying, oh, you can only live in this licensed care facility.
Right.
So I want to see that. And Champaign is unique in having this special funding that Lynn has talked about, both for developmental disabilities and for mental health, so that they don't have to rely 100% on state and federal funding. Instead, you can take a local tax money, and if you properly invest it, you can get a federal reimbursement for that money. And I've always thought it was wonderful you had both the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board. And Lynn reached out to me, and she said, could you please come down? And I said, when? She's already got me lined up for a lot of meetings.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Now, what is your hoped-for outcome, Lynn?
Oh, I was just sitting here listening to John, and all of this is right. And I'm having a really dark thought that I need to share, and that is there. It is significant that you're coming at this particular time of year, because at this time of year, the community becomes extremely concerned with emergency care and homeless services. And so I thought that this would be a good time for us to talk about permanent supportive housing, in, you know, while we're gearing up to talk about getting people, saving people from freezing to death, that we also introduce the idea of people having place to live, right? That that this is an important narrative. We didn't make space for it last year, but I'm hoping that you can help to create that energy. The other dark thought I'm having is that we have our gun violence problem in this community has peaked again. It was at it ebbed a little bit last year, but we're back. Oh, is that right? Is that the right word? I'm losing my words, too much coffee. But anyway, last year was lower, this year is back to peak. And that, you know, unfortunately, this community it is still very segregated. And there are certain places where you will find publicly funded housing. And those places do happen to be the less safe neighborhoods. So our gun violence is fairly concentrated in a couple of neighborhoods. And one of the places I see David Northern showing up all the time is at the Champaign Community Coalition meetings, where I also am involved. And I'm very happy that he's become active in that group. I think it's really important that we think about where people are living too.
And he talked last week about several developments being brand new construction that are in not necessarily, you know, low income areas of town.
Right.
So that's a big, you know, I think, John, that there is some resistance to folks with who have family members with developmental disabilities living in public housing, or, you know, that
that's
it's labeled as, how, you know, Section 8 housing.
Right.
Talk about how it's different now than what it was back when it established that kind of reputation.
Well, public housing has really changed nationally. It hasn't changed as much as it should in Champaign. You've had the same director for a lot of years, and a very not particularly innovative in terms of looking at new ways to do that. You need to spread housing out, and the way it's funded now is different than it used to be. We used to build housing. We put it all together in one place. You concentrated a huge number of poor people in one place, and as a result, there's not a lot of money, and there's not a lot of jobs, and we also never really funded the housing properly. We funded it. We created nice housing on day one, but we never also funded money to keep the housing in good repair. Nowadays, there's a different kind of funding, and I know that David Northern is going to bring that because they've already got one set of buildings that are getting federal funding through the Illinois Housing Development Authority. I've seen it in the pipeline. And they're going to take that same money that they were using to run the Housing Authority and instead match it with another kind of money, mm-hmm. and then they'll be able to fully make the building fully accessible, and it'll be beautiful. But the most important part is not how it looks on day one, but how it looks 30 years after it's built. Because 30 years after it's built, on day one, right. there was a budget clearly thought out about how much it would cost to maintain that building at that same level. And so we know how long a roof lasts. We know how long a washer lasts. We know how long... we know how long carpets are going to last. And so replacement of those various parts of the building were already figured in. And not only were they figured in using decades and decades of research, they're figured in at how fast they'll wear out with harder use by inexperienced tenants. And so the housing stays beautiful. And so if you were to go to CSH VIDS, VIDZ under YouTube,
oh, nice.
You'll see something about a building in Edwardsville
okay.
that shows you what new supportive housing looks like. They're brand new buildings. They're nicer than other buildings. They specifically won't allow students in there because they have to be for people who want to live permanently in the community and who may not have enough money, but there may also be some regular units that are for the working poor or people who would make minimum wage. And so there's a number of different categories. But again, the financing, it'll be a separate corporation, but a related corporation of the Housing Authority that then develops the building and maintains the building. And housing authorities are actually pretty good at managing buildings if they actually have the money. But it used to be that you had to let the building run down before you could get more money, and it was not very predictable.
Now there's a big influx. There's a big influx of money that should be coming in,
yes.
right? So
yes.
what are the things that people need to know? What are they going to? How are they going to benefit by coming to this study session on Wednesday?
Well, I think it will help them to understand how to use their charitable money and how to make investments that take advantage of their tax dollars. Illinois gets 46 cents of every dollar they send to the federal government. We don't do a very good job of getting return on our money because we don't pay enough for health care for people who are poor, and we don't pay enough for housing. And so making those investments, we can get some of that money back. And we can use local money through philanthropy, in which case all of 100% of your money goes towards that, but you don't get any of your tax money alongside it. Or you can use tax money, and you'll create what might be a more expensive project because all the jobs will be required in building the building to meet what's called prevailing wage. So in other words, whoever builds the building can't do it at minimum wage. They have to be an experienced provider
right.
or builder. There has to be an experienced property manager.
So lots and lots to learn.
To make the building accessible.
Yeah,
yep.
yeah, lots and lots to learn. We're running out of time. Lynn, why don't you give the details
sorry.
Of the location,
okay.
the time and the place, so that we know the date.
Okay, Brookins Administrative Building is at 1776 East Washington Street in Urbana. The conference room that we're using is the Dimmitt Conference Room within Regional Planning Center's wing, which is the southwest pod of the building. It's a very strange building, but you come in the door and there are signs leading to the Regional Planning Commission, and that's how you find
us. Awesome. Okay. Yes. So Wednesday, 5:30, Dimmitt Meeting Room, Brookins Center. Thanks for joining me today on the program, Lynn Canfield, Executive Director of the Champaign County DD Board and Mental Health Board, John Fallon of CSH, and hope to see you all on Wednesday. Thanks, John.
Thank you.